And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your regular host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. It's May 30th, 2021. That was our brother, Phil Oakes, the folk singer from the 60s, with his classic song, Small Circle of Friends. And of course, that is the problem, folks. When we live in our little small circle of friends and don't care about anything or anyone else, that's when crimes happen. That's how tyranny takes over. And it's especially relevant for today's program, which is entitled, When Churchyards Yawn. What children's graves reveal about ourselves. And of course, this is about an issue that we have been struggling with a lot on this program and in our work for over 25 years. And that is, how is it in our own country of Canada, or Canada now, and in any country in the world, in any community, how can crime go on against children? And then the criminals not only get away with it, but stay in power. That's an issue that's very much in the forefront today. It's very much the issue because in the news this last week, and this was news suddenly picked up all over the world, the Tkalups Band Council, that's a native state-funded band council in Kamloops, British Columbia, announced that they are starting a dig at a gravesite of 215 children who used to go to the infamous Catholic Kamloops Residential School. Now, they are conducting a secret dig, and of course, they're employees of the federal government. They're employees of the Crown that put those children in the ground, the Catholic Church and the Crown of England, which are now criminally indicted and convicted. Criminal bodies are now going ahead and using their native employees to destroy the evidence again. Now, this is nothing new in Canada. It's been going on for many years. If you follow our work, murderbydecree.com, you'll see all of the hard evidence there. Our work since 1998, where we held the first tribunal ever in Canadian history to look into these crimes. And again, in 2010, we issued a public statement to the police, to the native band councils, where these grave sites are, including in Kamloops, 22 mass grave sites. And at the time, totally ignored. Suddenly, the Kamloops Band Council is interested in the issue. And we're going to go into that today. As a matter of fact, on the show, we're going to talk about the situation now there and give some very important background as to what that crime is and where it came from, what we can do about it. Halfway through the show, we're going to step back a bit from a lot of the horror and do a spiritual reflection, which is what we try to do on the show, our double helix show, where we try to combine the political and the spiritual all the time. And then later in the show, we'll get into more of the consequences, what we can do today to stop this. Now, we've talked about this event. You know, what I like to start this whole thing off, I like to call it no-name investigations. What happens in Canada, like in any genocidal regime, is the people who did the crime will launch official investigations. They like to call them royal commissions in Canada, where they talk a lot, but nothing's ever resolved, because what they do is they never name the criminals, as is happening with the whole so-called dig in Kamloops as we speak. They're not talking about who did it. They're not even announcing if they're going to do forensic investigations into the remains they find to determine cause of death, who's responsible, who to lay criminal charges against. I mean, folks, this is a crime scene. They, by their own admission, there's hundreds of the remains of hundreds of children in there, assuming they're telling us the truth, which is a big if. So normally in a crime scene, you know, imagine it was 215 white kids. The police would show up. The forensic examiners would come in. The whole thing would be, the purpose of it is to lay criminal charges. But in Canada, it's no-name investigation. That is, nobody's ever named. That's what happened in the infamous Truth and Reconciliation Commission, set up in 2008, ran 7 years. You, the taxpayers, forked out over $80 million so that they could cover up their crimes, because guess what? The TRC was set up by the very people who did the crime. The Anglican Catholic United Churches that killed over 60 to 80,000 children in these death camps, they still call residential schools, they appointed the commissioners, like the serial killer getting to appoint his jury. And the Privy Council that passes most of the laws, including the COVID regulations in Canada, they approved the nomination. So tag team effort by the criminals to conceal it. They concealed it by making sure that in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission guidelines, no names were ever to be mentioned. If a native eyewitness mentioned a name, it was to be scrubbed from the record. The official record of the TRC wasn't allowed to mention dead children or criminal liability of any organization. It was no name investigation. Well, you've seen that played out again in Kamloops. And the situation now is kind of interesting, some updates about it. In response to them announcing this, the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State issued a press release, a media release, which you can see up online at two of our sites, murderbydecree.com, under ITCCS updates. You'll see that in the headline. And our Republic of Canada site, that's Republic of Canada, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofcanada.ca. Just go under breaking news, and you'll see two recent postings there. A memorandum on all of the crimes that went on in the residential school in Kamloops, based on all of our archival evidence over 25 years, and the actual media advisory itself that went out from the tribunal in Brussels to the media all over the world. But let me just summarize what our response was to what the state-funded Native Bank Council in Kamloops is doing. International Tribunal protests destruction of crime scene evidence in Kamloops. Human rights observers are dispatched to protect mass graves of children and issue cease and desist notice. Witnesses and traditional Native elders to hold ceremony and protest at the dig site. Now, the ITCCS, don't forget, was the body that successfully prosecuted Canada, the British Crown, and the Vatican for crimes against humanity. We held forth of Pope Benedict in 2013. Well, today we notified, or rather on May 28th, we notified the Tkemelec Band Council, the Roman Catholic Church, and the Government of Canada that human rights observers have been dispatched to Kamloops. As a matter of fact, they're there already. They have long distance and close-up observation going on. We're filming what's going on at that site. And the ITCCS also reminded all of these parties that for the unearthing of the remains of children by the agencies responsible for their death is against the law. It's against international law, and it's actually an obstruction of justice and a crime under international law. The parties that did the crime cannot go in and start investigating their own crime. Of course, Canada's got away with that already with the TRC, but they're doing it again. And so the ITCCS reminded them that they're criminally liable for what they're doing right now. And secondly, they have said that they are not only observing what's going on, but they will be holding a joint ceremony and what they call a witnessing protest at the site of the dig, along with other Native elders and others in our Republic of Canada and ITCCS network. So that's the media release. It's gone out, and it's interesting because the news of this dig has been hitting the international press for the first time in years. Normally, Canada's ignored, but the New York Times, the BBC networks, international and within Britain. Even we have people in all over Europe, and they've said the Czech newspaper, media in Nigeria, in Asia, Hong Kong, they're all reporting this because, of course, it's a spin, official spin coming out of the Canadian government. So, of course, it's reported by the global media. In contrast, to remind everyone, in 2011 and 2012, I and ITCCS investigators were invited by the Grand River Mohawk elders, the oldest residential school in the country, in Brantford, Ontario, that's called the Mohawk Institute. And we conducted an approved ground-penetrating radar survey of the ground and a dig where bones were actually uncovered. That was with the full approval of the elders. It was started by Bill and Cheryl Squire. And even the government chiefs were on board with it for a while until we actually found bones. Those bones were sent to the Smithsonian Institute in Washington. The chief pathologist, Don Ordner, said they were human, they were spotted. One newspaper reported it, and that was the local Mohawk newspaper in Brantford. Totally blacked out of the Canadian press. The first opens of the mass grave site in Canadian history, the residential school, totally blacked out. In Canada, the public in Kamloops announced this, and it's all over the international press. So it shows you, it's a sign that it's definitely an approved, government spin operation on that gravesite. The other indicator of that is, and it's kind of comical, because the chief coroner for British Columbia announced right away in the corporate media that he'll be on the scene to help the investigation. Well, that's actually the kiss of death. The BC coroner is infamous for covering up the real cause of death
of Native people, not only in residential schools, but in recent times. An example of that is our brother William Coombs, who, by the way, this show is dedicated to. He was a survivor of the Colonial School. He is the one who said Queen Elizabeth took 10 children from that school on October 10th. He's never seen it. And he was killed for it. He was such a kind of lack of good testimony. He was grand and sick of the humanity in February 2011. According to the attending nurse, Chloe Kirkman, he had all the symptoms of arsenic poisoning. He died shortly thereafter. But B.C. Carter issued the fake death certificate saying not to work on meningitis. But according to nurse Chloe Kirkman, he had none of the symptoms. So for the B.C. Carter to be on the scene, it's another indication that the death will be a cover-up. Any gruesome details they find in those bones will be whitewashed. The record, like always happens. So that's their agenda. But the whole point of this show is to show folks that, in fact, we have the power, as long as we look outside our small circle of friends and take back our power. It doesn't really matter what they're doing. Yeah, they're doing the standard cover-up, but don't forget, there's another phenomenon going on. They are responding to the terrain we have established. Just like Pierre Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister Trudeau, number two, announced on June 4th, 2019, yes, it was genocide. You see, after 20 years of this system, that's what Sun Tzu in the Art of War calls the chi. We capture the chi. We set the term to genocide and doing things, which and the what we found is that you know, they have to respond on the terms of what we're doing. And that's kind of the general point. The only thing, this is the reason that's going on now in Kamloops is because of the fact that we set the tone. We said, you've got to start bringing these children home for a proper burial. And now they're making all the moves to make it seem like that's what's happening. So I just want to make sure you're all hearing me because Don, my operator, said I wasn't coming through okay. So, Don, let me know if it's still a problem. I want to make sure people hear this show in particular. If there is interference going on, I wouldn't be surprised because this is a very contentious issue from their point of view when they're trying to do their cover-up. Anyway, we'll just keep plowing ahead here. The general point is that they're responding on our terms. And, they, of course, they're trying to co-opt the whole thing. That's kind of the situation right now. But let me do some background that, you know, we promised, which, again, you can see at republicofcanada.ca under breaking news. But this is all very important information for people to have. Oh, before I get to that, though, I wanted to give another very important update. We mentioned we have observers going on of the dig. We also know that the RCMP are monitoring all the highways, Highway 5. They've been stopping people coming into Kamloops, and the Band Council patrols are in the area stopping anyone from getting near the dig site. Now, you know, again, it's a secret dig, but just like what happened when they shut down the dig at the Mohawk Institute. So, again, that's, I think, a sign that they are very concerned about people showing up and looking what's going on. And here's a reason why. I'm going to go now to this memorandum that we sent out this last week. And it's entitled Not Abuse, But Mass Murder, a memorandum on genocidal crimes at the Catholic Kamloops Indian School. Now, this is based on archival records and eyewitness interviews going back right to 1998 when we held our first tribunal. It's also from the work of our Truth Commission set up in 2000, long before anybody or the government or anybody wanted to even talk about this stuff. Friends and relatives of the disappeared, our group that occupied churches and forced the apology, and, of course, the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, the ITCCS. First of all, the general point about the Kamloops Residential School, and probably what's prompted this dig, was that it was one of these notorious special treatment centers. It wasn't just your average residential school. Any child and anyone who ran away from a residential school or was being consistently, oppositional was sent to the Kamloops School. It was like the United Church School in Port Alberni, the Anglican School in Alert Bay, British Columbia. It was where they put all their bad apples to deal with them. And that's why the average death rate at the Kamloops School
was extremely high. It averaged well over 50% for most of its years. And also, it was a location for many medical experimentation drug testing protocols, including the present COVID virus, and similar things that were still being used on Indian reservations where nobody can refuse medical treatment or they'll go to jail. Also, it was a site of involuntary sterilization programs, began back in the 20s, still being reported in the 1970s. Here's one voice, survivor Sam Adolf, one of the people we interviewed. When he was 14 years old in 1959, he said, quote, "They called us the red tag boys. At the end of each term, they'd hand out the red tags, and if you had one, you had to report to the clinic. That's where I got cut. I don't know who the doctor was. He was from somewhere else, and we never saw him again. But he fixed me so I could never have a kid." And that's because especially intelligent Native children, or those who were defiant, got sterilized. You can't have intelligent or oppositional natives running around, so you just sterilize them. Now, that's one of the chief things in international law defined as a genocide and crimes against humanity. Point two on the Convention on Genocide, you're trying to stop birth, and so we sterilize you. Okay, more hard proof of genocide going on. But also the National Defense Research Board and the National Defense Medical Center back east in Toronto and Ottawa, they used the Kamloops School for generations, often with fatal results. They performed these tests on children, like denying them food and vitamins, and then monitored as their bodies fell apart. They inserted experimental birth control devices into girls as young as 7. They used involuntary drug testing in conjunction with companies like Pfizer, Eli Lilly, and Bayer. Yeah, the very ones doing the COVID virus vaccines now. They would test out drugs, some of those companies, on children. They did pain threshold studies. The children were burned, electrocuted, starved to death, even immersed in ice water, subjected to chemical and biological warfare agents. These are all from records and eyewitness testimonies. Mind control experiments, electric shocks, sensory deprivation, experimental sterilizations, including tubal ligation, surgical castration, prolonged exposure of the genitals to X-rays, and indiscriminate drug testing, all of those things look cool. And of course, none of those are ever talked about in the corporate media, by the government, by the churches, by the native puppets. They've been told not to. Now, just a side point I wanted to say on that before I forget. People are saying now, well, why are they doing this right now? There's a basic reason. We've found out through our own sources and through common sense that back in June 2019, when Trudeau publicly admitted the genocide, prior to that, there had been a deal worked out with the Aboriginal organizations, because Trudeau only made that statement knowing that he was covered, knowing that the UN and other agencies that might have theoretically intervened told him, don't worry, there won't be such an intervention. And we know that for a fact, because when I've gone to the UN and talked to people, I get that same story. They say, what country wants to open this can of worms of genocide in Canada when we're all guilty of it? So Trudeau got that reassurance. That's why he was able to make the statement in June, knowing there'd be no consequence. But at the same time, he told the native chiefs, you're not going to get in hot water either, because don't forget, for 23 years, the Band Council in Kamloops ignored all of the evidence we'd been sending them after our first tribunal in 1998. They wouldn't touch the issue with a 10-foot pole. Now suddenly they're concerned about their relatives in the ground because they've been reassured that they won't get in trouble for doing it. Because don't forget, these chiefs were colonial. They were told as far back as 1922, if they brought all the tribal children into the school and helped run them down and helped bury them in secret when they died, their own children wouldn't be touched. So all of the chiefs had to deal that they would be able to get away with themselves not being harmed if they sold out all the other children and brought them in. So blood is on the hands of the government-funded native chiefs as well, and that's why they haven't been digging around the grave. And that's why they've been conducting such an enormous attack on me personally and this whole independent campaign to expose these crimes. So this is, again, looking at the history, knowing these things, that's how we find them out and explain the present. These experiments, including experimental vaccines, this went on consistently.
This has even been reported by former Assembly of First Nations Chief Matthew Coon-Combe, who confirmed that their elders have told them that they were constantly used as guinea pigs for vaccine testing. Now, don't forget as well, these things went on in local Indian hospitals, like the Charles Kamsel Hospital in, run by the United Church in Edmonton, where Kamloops children were continually sent. And even in the head minister for Indian Affairs in 1949, Neil Parker, said, quote, "The indiscriminate transfer of residential school students to church-run Indian hospitals is responsible for an inordinately high death rate among our wards." And get this, "I can say accurately that half of them failed to survive to take advantage of the education we offer," unquote. Another confirmation of the 50% death rate. Well, official government duplicity today says, oh no, it's only 2%. That's the fifth line coming out of the bogus Truth and Reconciliation Commission, even though they contradict themselves. Their own records say that 50 to 60% death rate was happening as early as 1903. That's when the first one was registered, that first high death rate level. Murray Sinclair, who ran the TRC, said it's safe to say that half these children died. And then he comes in public and says, oh no, it was only like 2 or 3%. So which figure is true? They're saying 2% out of one side of their mouth, 50% out of the other. They just lie and make it up as they go along because they know they're going to get away with it. At least in their world, they're going to get away with it. Now, don't forget as well, the Kamloops School was a traditional center of cultic activity. We have reports of satanic ritual killings there connected to the Ninth Circle. William Coombs gave a description of that in a lot of the testimonies. And again, up online, murderbydecree.com. And slave auctions, children sold as young as four to visiting local dignitaries. It goes on and on like that. And here's the other very important thing. There was a prescribed death rate quota of between one-third and one-half of the students. References of that are made in correspondence between Kamloops principals. They talked about ways of keeping the dormitories cold, where keeping dietary conditions poor, all of this so that tuberculosis will carry away most of the children, and then they can blame it on a natural cause. And despite all of these horrible crimes and huge death rate, the official line of the native puppet chiefs, the government, the media, the churches is the same. These were mostly deaths from natural causes. Well, you know from this evidence and by what you can just read online at murderbydecree.com that that's total bullshit. And body disposal through not only incineration, but interment in secret graves that were located as far as 50 kilometers away from the school. One of those places being Dead Man's Creek, which is where William Coombs saw Queen Elizabeth take those 10 children away, and they were never seen again. Dead Man's Creek is about 40 kilometers west of the Kamloops School, and that's the reason they killed William with arsenic poison in St. Paul's Hospital before he spoke at our tribunal about that. So, William also said they kept the furnace going 24/7, but it was totally out of bounds. But me and a friend saw Brother Murphy and a nun take little bodies and shove them into the flames. These kinds of testimonies are constant. And again, it's not the lack of evidence. It's always a question of what you do with it. So I won't belabor that any further. The memorandum documenting these crimes and showing how farcical are the claims of the government and these pretenses that they're going to try to get at the heart of what went on and why those children end up on the ground. It's more just the same old whitewash. And that's where we come in, because we are now on the ground. They're countering that. In Kamloops, we're filming the evidence. And here's the question, folks. As Native people in Kamloops, why should you be kept out of that dig? That dig has to be opened up. What are they hiding? Why do they have to do it in secret? These things have to have the light of truth shined on them. I urge people to go down to that site and demand entrance and say, what are you doing with the remains of our relatives? They need to be identified for how they died, who killed them, so that criminal charges can be laid. Otherwise, they're not going to arrest. And they need a proper burial. We've been calling for that for over 20 years. And I'm sure we keep pressing that, and it will happen, but only because we make it happen. Now, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to check with Don now to make sure the sound is okay. But I want to play now a reflection I did as part of the Covenanters Movement, which is an independent spiritual movement.
And it's on the whole question of the massacre of the innocents. We'll be back after this clip.
Hi, everyone. Kevin Annett's Eagle Strong Voice again. This is my sermon for the fourth Sunday in Advent, December 22nd. It's entitled, Slaughtering Children, Business as Usual in the Palace. This is about the slaughtering of the innocent by King Herod. And when the wise men had left, look, a heavenly messenger came to Joseph and cried, Wake up, take the baby Jesus and mother and flee to sanctuary and live there until I bring word, for King Herod will seek to destroy the baby. Then Herod set out in his wrath to exterminate all of the helpless innocents in Bethlehem and its region who were 2 years old and younger, relying on the knowledge of the wise men. And from every hilltop came the call to mourn and to weep inconsolably, for the mothers of the dead cannot be comforted. Well, their tiny butchered remains lie under your feet. They were happy innocent children, and they were slaughtered and thrown into secret graves. Just think about it. Try to imagine that. Try to picture it and feel their suffering. Well, can you? Will you dare to? Because they died at the hands of church and state. These were official killings. And so you're not just supposed to ask about what happened to those children. You're not supposed to even know or care what happened. Or even imagine the experience of it happening. You're not even allowed to cry out in horror and outrage and call for the horror to stop. Your heart is to remain distant and numb, just as the victims are to remain silent and forgotten, or to remain invisible, because the killers are still in charge. The killers of those children are still running the governments and the churches and the businesses. And if you mention the fate of those babies and ask who is to blame and why it happened, the killers will strike at you. So do the smart thing. Stay quiet. Think of nice, positive things. Pay your taxes that allow the crimes to continue. And don't imagine those mass graves of children or the horrible screams of babies being chopped to pieces. Sacrifice your soul as their little bodies were sacrificed, all for the service of the emperor. You can do something else instead. It's risky, but it's possible. You can do what your soul and those victims require. You can risk everything in your life for the sake of the lost children and for all the others who will die today and tomorrow at the hands of the same killers robed in stately office. Well, that's the situation today in Canada, in America, or anywhere else in the so-called civilized world here in the year 2019. The same was true in Judea in the year 4 BC. The crime and the choice continue. In a way, that's all there is to say today. What matters is not what we say, but what we do. All the words spoken over the years, all the long interviews and tomes written about child sacrificial killings and genocide by church and state and baby trafficking, none of those words have stopped the killer's knives. The crime continues today unabated. And the only way it's ever going to stop is when we place our own bodies between those innocent victims and the killers who are coming for them. This sermon, like my life, is dedicated to that purpose, to stop them. Well, today it's obscenely ironic that the Christian churches that have spilled the blood of so many children will be presenting the gospel reading on the forthcoming Sunday in Advent, December 22nd. When you consider the enormous anger and denial among Canadian churchgoers, whenever we've tried speaking to them about their genocidal acts, you can bet that very few people in the pews in the Anglican, the Catholic, the United Churches this Sunday, very few of them are going to draw a connection between Herod's slaughter of the innocent babies and his attempted slaughter of Jesus that they hear in the Bible, connecting that with their own murder of over 60,000 Aboriginal children over a century in the so-called residential schools. Because the Christians' once-a-week happy hour in church is not designed to place themselves in the Bible story or make it apply to their own lives. Well, despite all that, the blood of the innocent still cries out through the strongest cathedral church door and the most completely closed human heart. As the gospel passage today concludes, the mothers of the dead cannot be comforted. They cannot be comforted by all of the apologies by church and state killers, or all the reconciliation babble, or all the blood money payoffs, or all the fake government inquiries. Because there's no moral statute of limitation on murder any more than there's a legal one. The guilt remains. The killers of children stand convicted and guilty and sentenced by the very fact of their crime, even if they be kings and rulers and popes. Well, that's the powerful message in today's gospel reading from Matthew. It's made doubly powerful by how closely it reflects how things actually operate in the world of politics, then and now. For this is a story of the ritual killing of children, one of the oldest practices in history, and a practice of church and state as common and as legal as war and genocide. The story goes, a group of so-called wise men, hired and dispatched by King Herod himself, search out a rumor that a baby is about to be born who's going to overthrow King Herod. There's kind of a dark humor that runs through this whole passage. Like any politician, Herod blithely cons the not-so-wise men into being his agents. He says, "You know, I want to worship that newborn Messiah too. Please go find him." Well, the murderous intent is always surrounded in that religious garb, that self-righteous projection. Because isn't it a fact that people, and especially rulers, can more easily kill and order killing when they know that there's a God who sanctions and forgives them for all their deeds? And so, like obtuse academics or unwitting spies on a black ops mission, the bright boys go to work for the killer on a throne. They eventually discover the little threat called Jesus in a manger, and they dutifully inform the king. Well, are these guys naive? Are they just doing their job? Or are they just stupid? Either way, their news frightens Herod and makes him even more paranoid than he already is, like anyone with a lot to lose. He sees conspiracies everywhere. He distrusts his bright boys and he tries to have them arrested. Well, failing that, he then goes after baby Jesus, using the information so conveniently provided by his wise guys. But Jesus and his family have been tipped off and they skedaddle away to a safe house somewhere. Well, frustrated not once but twice, Herod has to save face, and so like any ruler feeling his power slipping from him, he commits crime. He orders mass murder. Every child in the area under 2 years old is killed. Well, this clumsy scattergun approach fails to hit Jesus, of course, and one can almost hear the gospel writer chuckling up the sleeve of his robe, despite all the bloodshed. Warning, exile, murder, the usual pattern of corporate damage control. And then, of course, comes the final stage, the great mourning of this ritual killing that can never find comfort, the cries that never stop in any heart that's still alive. That's how this gospel story concludes, with the reality of life. Nothing is healed, nothing is fixed, because it's carrying on. And the killers don't feel sorry at all. And that should be evident. Well, this gospel passage may end on that message of mourning, unending mourning and wailing. But when you look deeper, that's the biblical answer to official murder. To the ones who never worry about covering up their mess because they know it's all legal and they're going to get away with it, like they always do. The Bible says, sure, go ahead, worldly rulers can get away with anything, even the ritual satanic slaughter of children. Just look around the world, people. It's the norm. In the Mormon Church, in the Roman Catholic Church, all the major religions do it. That's been documented. We know that now for a fact. Just look at murderbydecree.com. Okay, that may be the fact of the world, but the survivors are a threat to all of that. The ones who survive with the memory and the knowledge of what these bastard criminals are doing, they're the answer. Because they can remember the crime and the fallen ones. That's a great power, because they can keep the truth and the memory alive. The memory of those children are kept alive by the survivors. But only if they keep on shouting out the truth, loudly and publicly. Not going into counseling and feeling better about yourself and staying quiet or giving a gag order after giving a bit of money from the killers. No, that's not what we're to do. We're to keep shouting out the crime loudly. That's the only way we pay homage to the fallen and honor them. It's the only way this thing is ever going to stop. By letting God's own pain and outrage yell through our mouths. The wrong that's carrying on today, and that shout against the wrong carries on forever. That's the nature of God. It doesn't back off with the truth, like we're always pressured to do. Well, isn't it amazing how even at his birth, Jesus caused hysteria among rulers and poses such a threat to established authority? Our innocence and honesty always evokes that kind of reaction in the guilty and causes them to come down on us. Like any truth-teller, Jesus became a refugee from state terror from day one and a wanderer in poverty and exile. And he stayed that way to the day of his judicial murder on a cross. So it's no accident that Jesus has always been a symbol and a great inspiration to the poor and the oppressed everywhere, for his life and death as the permanent outsider mirrors their own experience of the world. Well, middle-class churchgoers are another matter. They can't relate to the man, Jesus, except as an abstract cult figure. They tend to be left cold by the human Jesus and by any equating of him with rebellion against the established order or with the underclass, even though Scripture is full of that association of him and the poor, and the struggle to overturn existing society. Well, as a clergyman, I constantly experience this dichotomy between how the poor view Jesus and how the affluent do. Take Jesus' first message when he gets up in Luke 4, they describe this, when he gets up in his hometown synagogue in Nazareth and proclaims that he's come to set the captives free, to raise up the poor and to open the prison doors and let everyone free. Well, that passage has always tended to alarm and confuse my wealthier parishioners. It genuinely confused them, said, like, what is this anarchist trying to do, right? But it brought, the same passage brought a relief of smile and amusement among poor folks, among Indians, among the other outcasts in the pews. This divide in the response of rich and poor became even greater when Jesus concludes his proclamation by announcing that he's inaugurating something called the Jubilee Year, that Hebrew tribal event that was really a social revolution. It's when all the debts were canceled, all the land and wealth returned to people, shared equally. It was that leveling down of society, the Jubilee Year. Well, Jesus, in other words, has been causing upset and turning things upside down ever since the day of his birth, and we still see that in the churches today, and in any of us who try to embody that radical message. Well, that fact in today's gospel message doesn't exactly fit the feel-good, festive, middle-class Christmas season, because it lays out the four turbulent realities that characterize Jesus' life and work, like a cycle of life and death, a warning of danger, an escape into exile, a massive killing of the innocent, and a mourning for those fallen. To understand that, we have to go deeper into those four actions in the story by understanding their word origin and meaning. Well, the first action is a warning, issued by unseen protectors, often the only ones who do help us. You have to get away now or you'll be destroyed. That warning. Well, the Greek word for warning is krematso, and that means to be admonished by God and given a new purpose and name. You're not just given a warning. You say, okay, here's some camouflage. Here's a new identity so you can escape. In other words, you're not only yanked to your feet all of a sudden, but you're garbed with a new identity to get you the hell out of there. How else can you operate in this kind of murderous and deceptive world? Second step, you flee into exile. The word is fuego. In Greek and Latin means to fly away. But there's more to it than that. The word also means you shun evil by departing from it. So in other words, this fleeing isn't an act of fear, but it's actually part of a positive step into an inner cleansing, of separating ourselves from the evil around us that inevitably affects us. Going into exile from everything we know is our first spiritual act in order to reform ourselves according to a higher heavenly aim. Throughout our many myths and legends, it's like that. The hero leaves his home country and people to go into foreign lands in order to discover his true purpose and his true strength. Well, because of that, the boot always comes down. The empire strikes back. State terror then slays the innocent. Step three. In Matthew 2, verse 16, the Greek word for slay, as in slew the innocent, is anoreo, and that means to steal and then exterminate. The way animals are grabbed, bound up, penned in a cage, and then ritually slaughtered. The same word is used to describe sacrificing an animal or a child. It's part of a massive blood ritual going back thousands of years, whereby people believe that they were purified by the killing of something that is totally pure and innocent. You find it in the Hebrew word kadash, It means two things all at the same time. It means to sanctify, to make holy, and to sacrifice. We make something holy by murdering it. And there you have it. Bingo, the source of the crime. For wired into the language and thought of Judeo-Christianity is the ancient tribal belief that one cannot truly worship God and be made pure without ritually murdering the best, the purest, and the most innocent among us. Why else were the firstborn children of the Canaanites bound and thrown into the fire pit of their rapacious god Moloch, the fire god who ate children? Why was God's own firstborn son Jesus sacrificed on a cross? And why today is the death of the firstborn children of Ninth Circle cult members in the Mormon and Catholic churches the ticket of admission into the higher circles of those organizations? For all the same reason, innocent blood is still believed to be our key to worldly power and even ultimate paradise in heaven. Beyond sick. But what can one can do in the face of this murderous infamy, this monstrous crime? What can one do in the face of it but wail and mourn without end? And wailing isn't just complaining, it's shouting out a message. This kind of unending lamentation follows from the crime that we talk about today. In verse 18 in the passage today, the word for lament is threnos. The word in Greek, threnos, which means to cry out forever. It doesn't stop. But it also means, there's a double meaning again, it also means to warn, trouble, and frighten. As the mothers of the slain children who cannot be comforted cry out in their agony, they're also issuing a warning to the world, one that troubles and frightens people, as it must. For what else than that can rouse a compliant, a complicit population who are party to these crimes? What else can arouse them from that to do more than simply feel sorry for the victims? The gospel message today, and like so much of the gospel, is not meant to be politely listened to and then go away unmoved. It has to cause an eruption in the listener for change to work. There has to be an inner turmoil that breaks us free from the chains of evil and slavery forged on us since birth. Without that inner explosion, our hearts and lives will continue to be unmoved by the mass murder of children and will continue to refuse to stop the killers. And so now, each of you have a choice to make. You too have been warned to flee from such an association with death. You must accept a new name and purpose and go into exile from your life, from all that you have known, if you are to be made fit to bear witness to the crime and to give voice to the grief and to the fallen children. All of this is for a higher purpose, to make you fit to be the means of God's revolution by which the blood-soaked rulers and their evil prince of darkness are destroyed forever as the new creation dawns. As Jesus says later in the Gospel of Matthew, that which you refuse to do for me, you're refusing to all of my children, and that which you do to the least of my children, you also do to me. Well, may the great mystery lead you from this land of lies and murder and remake you in your own exile to be fit for the coming world and for the least of these, our suffering children. Their cries continue to reach out to you. Amen. This is Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice. More to come.
And we're back. Of course, that was a couple of years ago, but it's certainly relevant to everything we're talking about today. The warning that those children in the ground could be your children tomorrow, and they are your children right now if you accept this vaccination culture. I don't even like to call it a vaccination, but the same agencies, Health Canada, that was sterilizing and experimenting on the children in that Kamloops, quote, residential school, rather, death camp, that same agency is shoving the needle into the army of children right now, if you agree with it. Now, the warning goes out to all of us, but in practice, we find not too many of us can respond in practice. This isn't meant for a lot of us. Most of us will not be able to break from the old system. We know that. We've had hard experience of that over the last year and a half. And when we've been setting up common law assemblies and that, people get to a certain point and then they drop out. They run in fear. They don't see what's at stake. They're only looking at their own life, that small circle of friends that Phil Oakes talked about, and they're not understanding that their own fate is tied up with what we do right now. Now, just to end a little bit on the whole Kamloops situation, you can see what we're talking about. Do a Google Maps search. Go to Kamloops, K-A-M-L-O-O-P-S, Kamloops, British Columbia. You'll see the city. If you zoom in, the Kamloops Residential School is actually labeled in there, and something called the, I'm probably not pronouncing this right, Sewumpchuck Museum and Heritage Park. It's spelled S-E-C-W-E-P-E-M-C. At that heritage park, you're looking at the mass grave site. You're looking at a big field south of the school, and you can see indentations on the ground. They're not saying where they're digging, but if you look south of that, there's a big round building. That's their powwow center. According to William Coombs, before he died, and others who were eyewitnesses there, that used to be an orchard, and that's where one of the graves was. So what they tend to do is they put buildings over the real mass grave sites. The building to the right and the building to the south, you'll notice, are very prominent, recently built. Those were built over the underground torture center where William was held. He was put on a rack and stretched and sodomized with a cattle prod. It happened in these underground torture centers that they built those buildings over. So when they say they're digging up mass grave sites, they're lying. They're only digging up the sites where they know there isn't going to be a lot of incriminating evidence. And that's a map you can look at. And we've got about 7 minutes left, so I want to end and continue on this whole theme of what we do now. There's a great quote from Edward R. Murrow, the journalist. He said, "We can deny our heritage and our history, but we cannot escape responsibility for the results." And I would say we can't escape the results of our own heritage. We're looking at it right now. And if anything else is to come out of this, it's up to that remnant, and you know who you are, those of us who cannot live in the old order anymore and are groping through the desert to try to find something new, knowing we can't get back to the old Sodom. It's slated for destruction. We see it everywhere. But we haven't seen the new city yet. We're still searching for it. Part of the purpose of the show is to help you in that journey. And this final point on what I was talking about there from the slaughter of the innocents passage in Matthew, something called God's outrage. It doesn't stop, but the outrage, by its constant pushing, creates a new reality. And this is something, especially Canadians, we don't like anger. We don't like passion. We say there's nothing productive if you just keep screaming about something. Well, I beg to differ. It's only because we stood outside and inside those churches and never stopped yelling and talking about these dead children that this stuff is happening today. It's what gets results. Because God's outrage working through us, it doesn't ever sleep. The outrage of the prophet who says, "I cannot be part of this whole culture. I'm looking for the new, and I cannot ever stop talking about these slaughtered innocent children today and tomorrow," who will continue. When that happens, it gives birth to something new. It's the seeds of that new society that's got to be cleansed of the old. You know, that fire that's got to sweep through the old and burn it down before the new can come into creation. Now, those of you who understand what I'm talking about know that it's up to each one of us to do that, each of us of the remnant who are called to do this. This whole thing of the mass grave in Kamloops is reopening. It's really stupid on their part because what they're doing is reopening the whole can of worms again. Normally what they did over many years was just shut it all out of the media, shut me out. I wasn't mentioned in the corporate media since the official apology and spin in July 2008. I've been censored right out. But the very fact that they're reopening this whole issue means they're desperate. Their backs are to the wall. They've got to tie this whole thing up because it indicates a number of things. We're going to get into that next week in the show. We're running out of time now. And I'm going to talk more about this. But, you know, especially the arrangements that are being made, the pressure coming from China to resolve a lot of this stuff. Kamloops, you know, death camp, residential school, was the center of a lot of this stuff. And the Chinese obviously do not want to deal with this. They know very well that a lot of the experimental drugs, the vaccinations and that, the whole COVID thing, were first tried out on Native people because that's the law. In the Indian Act of Canada, you cannot refuse medical treatment. They tried all these experimental serums first on the Natives. A lot of that evidence is lying on the ground there in Kamloops, and that's why they have to shut it down quick. Well, doing like the churches did and making themselves look good in the process,
No one ever goes to jail. They can look like they've done something, and the evidence is destroyed. Well, we're there on the ground right now preventing that. To follow this work and to get involved, and urge people to go to Kamloops and be part of our protests and camp that we're building there to monitor these things, write to us, Republic National Council at protonmail.com. That's Republic National Council at protonmail.com or ITCCS office at protonmail.com. And we're going to end on Phil Oakes again. And it's called The Ballad of the Carpenter, very appropriate. But I want to again urge people to keep following this work. Come back and listen again next week on this show. And this show will be archived at bbsradio.com/herewestand very soon. And take the show and share it. That's one of the ways you can fight back now. But also write to us. You can write to me personally, angelfire101 at protonmail.com. There'll be a lot more coming out on those two websites, especially republicofcanada.ca under breaking news. Follow our work there. And most importantly, remember the nightmare that put those children in the ground. We will not let their evidence, the evidence of that nightmare or their little remains be destroyed by the native flunkies who are working by the, to, for the very powers that put those children in the ground. And we'll put your children in the ground tomorrow unless we stop them. This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. We'll be back.